Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome along to the Short Ball for this week. It's the first week of April here in New Zealand. Don't know about anywhere else. April Fool's Day, first of all. Ellie Williams, Mills Molina. What a crock of shit. Jeez, there were some terrible gags yesterday. Did you fall for any of them?
Didn't see anything. No, it was quite quiet. What a day it is today, though, mate.
Why?
My daughter's sixth birthday today.
Little champion. Yes.
Little Jess. She's six now. She's charging, mate. She's fantastic. Taking on the world.
Is she a regular listener of this podcast?
She is, actually. Yeah, she good. Tunes in.
Oh, that's good. Happy birthday,
Jess. When Dad's on the show, though.
He's bloody always missing the bar.
So she tunes in once a month. That's
great. Let's hope he turns up with a present today. Hey?
What?
What have you got, Jess?
I got her a little notebook and
got her a notebook?
And some pens. And then, surprise for tonight, I got a fishing rod, pink fishing rod. We're going to go fishing. Do the fishing thing.
That's a good idea. You get into fishing early.
Fishing's good, mate. They learn patience, discipline. They smell like fish, so men won't be attracted to them. You know, it's a good little tactic, really. I reckon.
Six.
You know, just
why the pink fishing rod? Are you gender stereotyping?
No, it just looked cool.
Yeah. Well, there is that.
Yeah. Anyway, what about the rugby?
I got Claremont's right after that. What about the rugby? Should we get into it? Well, let's start. We'll start with the Blues, shall we?
Yeah, we'll start with Friday night's game.
Do you want to start with Friday night's game?
Yeah, no, he's not excited anymore. Right? Won two games and he just thinks it's normal.
Can I just say, I'm going to give you some credit here. I'm going to pay you dues. I saw a little video clip of you before the game at the Cake Tin where you were asked for your prediction of the score and you said Crusaders 13+.
Yeah, and I said put your house on it.
You did say put the house on it. Why were you so confident about that Crusaders result?
I just think the forwards are too physically dominant. I think they can generate enough ball, whether it's 50 to 60 to 70% of the ball, they're guaranteed that portion. And then from that, I think the Crusaders are clinical enough to score enough points off that. So to me, it was all based around the forwards, tight five, really.
They were good.
That's my prediction. That was my prediction.
That was your prediction. 32-8, the final score. It just seemed to me, Millsy, the Hurricanes just, A, didn't know how to fire a shot, and B, didn't.
And it was weird, too, because that whole week, everyone was talking about how good the Crusaders, the Hurricanes had trained. They looked really well-oiled, and given the Crusaders had sort of come off a loss, a surprising loss to the Waratahs, they were thinking this could be the chance for the Hurricanes to actually keep going, right? But, mate, Crusaders.
They lacked attacking options.
Well, they did.
You know, like they didn't get a platform from the set piece. The scrum wasn't too bad, but it wasn't as, you know, sort of where it needed to be. They couldn't manipulate it. And then the line out was, you know, it was fiercely contested. So they didn't actually get ball to launch from. Does that really affect the Hurricanes all the time? Not really, I don't think. They're more broken play team. Yeah. But what happened there was the defensive line from the Crusaders was so fast. It was just coming up so fast, and it shut down their space out wide. So they couldn't actually create space out wide, the Hurricanes, to then start manipulating that open field or broken field type play. So they're pretty clinical like that, the Crusaders, in terms of what ball they give teams. So they'll know a team and what its strengths are, and they won't give them that ball, that type of ball. Mm. And they'll work all week towards, look, keep it structured, keep it structured, keep it structured. And they're hugely disciplined.
Yeah, we talked before or last week about that game and thought the kicking game was going to be crucial. And that's where Barrett needed to be at his very best, because the times the Crusaders have been under pressure is when there are a lot of contestable kicks to the back three. Remember, they lost Bridge before the game as well, so had to rejig their own back three. I didn't see evidence of that kicking game. I didn't see evidence that they'd gone into that game, the Hurricanes that is, with a real plan to pin the Crusaders back. You cannot allow the Crusaders to dictate terms in a game from anywhere on the opposition side of the 10-metre line. Once they are in that zone, they will attack. And I don't know why teams are so scared of kicking to the Crusaders, genuinely kicking. We've seen the Lions do it to the Crusaders when they beat them on the tour here. We've seen the Waratahs put up high balls, chase hard all day. And I know they've got Izzy Folau to do the job there. But teams just seem not to be capable, New Zealand teams anyway, of pinning this side back.
Sometimes they get into a false sense of what they're actually playing for. Because that sort of game plan, it comes across as a little bit boring. You know, you got to get down there, but you have to. If you're prepared to actually nut it out and be patient and find some nice holes and then sort of almost turn that that pressure over to the Crusaders and not hope, but really apply that sort of mentality into that game and pressure them, then they, just for that moment, once they sort of crack, if they do, and they will, but, you know, that's when you got to pounce on them. But sometimes when you've got so much attacking flair, that game almost becomes sort of, it's the willingness to stay in it, right, Wams?
Yeah. I mean, if we went back probably three or four little shows, boys, I think I did tell you how to beat the Crusaders. And it was exactly that. You've got to put high balls up on the corners and challenge them. And as Millsy said, it's boring, it's hard. So mentally, can the young kids or this generation of rugby players, which we're used to offloads and Hail Marys and all sorts of amazing things, can they stay in that pattern to keep that relentless pressure over on them, knowing that in the 70th minute, that's when they might get that break. Or if they do it the first time, they might concede a try, but keep at that plan.
And here are the numbers. The Hurricanes carry for more metres, they make more carries, they throw more passes, and they lose the game. Yeah, if you try to play all the rugby against the Crusaders, they'll find a way to beat you. The other thing about the Crusaders, we were just talking before we got in the studio today, that try, and I can't remember who scored it, was it Harvelli's second try, whatever it was, they defended on their own goal line. So they are 2 metres away from their own goal line. They win the turnover, they win the penalty, they kick for touch, they win another penalty, they kick for touch, they go 75 metres, then they play the next 25 on advantage and score a try. It's a 100-metre play on the back of refereeing decisions. I don't think there is a team in rugby, full stop, that understands how to play a referee like the Crusaders do. And that, it doesn't matter what side of the coin you're on, whether you think Ben O'Keefe was right to award those penalties. The fact is, when they are awarded them, they know exactly how to play it. And we've seen that time and time again, especially under Sam Whitelock's leadership, Millsy. It's impressive to watch them do that.
Yeah, they almost, I mean, those are the big turning points. When that sort of happens, they sort of seem to ride that wave, don't they? It's kind of like, you know, they've just absorbed all the pressure. Whether they ride the referee's decisions and things like that, there's just something that they do to make sure that they just turn that pressure into points. I mean, you're 2 metres out from your own line to get consecutive penalties after penalty after penalty, but then you've still got to execute.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, because if you lose that momentum again, all of a sudden it's turned. This Crusaders team doesn't lose momentum. It's almost like they've taken all, absorbed all that pressure, and then the excitement of having that turnover or whatever sort of almost gets them up to say, well, okay, now it's our turn to have a real good crack and get some points, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're happy to absorb the pressure for long lengths of time without breaking. So they're just happy to hold on, knowing back in their system. But also knowing the philosophy of rugby is it actually turns. Whether it is a referee, whether it's a freak play, whether it's the opposition just combust, something in the crowd, something. In a game of rugby, momentum always shifts. No one can have the momentum the whole game. Mm-hmm. So it always shifts, and they just wait for that time. And that's their discipline, that's their patience, that's the ability the Crusaders have always had.
But that comes down to cohesion too, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Because we've seen teams that, you know, the Blues have suffered from this for a long, long time, and the Hurricanes did.
Blues aren't suffering from anything.
Well, okay, hang on, we'll get to the Blues in a second. Okay. You don't have to be defender-in-chief. The thing about it is, though, is that once you have those opportunities, once the momentum turns your way, you have to know as 15 guys what you're on about.
Yep.
Now, some teams have two guys who know what they're on about, or three guys, or four guys, or a forward pack, but not the back line. The Crusaders, 1 to 15 on the field at that time, knew exactly what the plan was. That is the thing that impresses me most.
Yeah, and when you know what the plan is, they almost – I mean, I know what you're saying in terms of they sort of ride the referee, but all of a sudden it's the pitches they sort of present the referee to be able to show them, okay, this is – we're playing a positive brand here. We've just absorbed that. Someone might be in his ear. It won't be all of them. It'll be one particular person in the way they actually say
all of them.
Yeah, they're not sort of getting in his face and going, you got to do this, got to do this, like we did it in the Jaguares Chiefs game. Everyone was chipping away, Angus Gardner, and I thought he'd done a fantastic job. But the way they go about, I wouldn't say manipulating the ref, just to show him that picture, someone in his ear in a good way, it just continues that momentum. Whereas I think other teams, they don't do that. You know, as soon as they turn it over or – you know, win that momentum back. It's all about, hey, yeah. And it's often rah-dy, rah-dy, rah. Mm. These guys are nice and calm. They're showing really good pitches. And and it's human nature for a referee to ride that wave with them, right?
From a team perspective, being in there, it's so simple. So it's easy to switch. So, you know, from 1 week to a next week, your game plan is not changing massively. It's all very stock standard. So it's almost come second nature. And when a game plan is second nature, Millsy, you don't really think it just happens. Yeah. And I think that's the beauty of what they do is people look and they go, look how complicated it looks. It's actually so damn simple down there that, you know, it's just about you and it's about two or three different types of abilities to play. And that's us. And just go and do it. Because you can't teach a man how to run around someone or beat him. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, so
That's an awesome. Now it just actually reminds me of a lot of things. You know, when I used to play for the Chiefs, when we were struggling, and man, often there's so many things that goes on in your head. You're like, bam, blah, 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 oh, jeepers, who cares? Yeah. And then you get to the All Blacks, and it's just, you're right. It's just everything's clear. Okay, we've just done this. It's everything. Yeah, this is the momentum. This is my job. Focus on that. Yep. But these guys are doing it at Super Rugby level, where it's flamboyant and whatnot. And sometimes, you know, because of the nature of the way the game's played in Super Rugby, you just think, oh, it's no sort of stuff. They don't have that mentality, which is fantastic.
The one narrative that came out from an individual point of view after that game was, of course, and it was always going to be Budden Barrett v. Richie Mwanga. Where do you guys see Budden Barrett's game at the moment? Because there's no doubting his ability, his class as a player. But do you think he's struggling at the moment to put a game plan together for the Hurricanes, or was it just one of those nights?
No, look, I just think this is media talk, to be honest with you. I think, you know, you're sitting there going, well, what I talk about, let's talk about the big headline. He's the big act. The thing he's got, he's got a forward pack that isn't that dominant. He's living off scraps. Him and TJ do extremely well to even direct them and give them a lot of opportunity, I think. It's one of those things, when you're a great, great rugby player, you always expect greatness.
Mm-hmm.
And week in and week out, year in and year out, you're not always going to get it. You're going to get stock standard. Hence, that gives us these talking points. Then you come back to the other point, because we wouldn't be talking about this if there wasn't a kid by the name of Richie Mwanga who has got the composure like no other kid. He's got the skill set in terms of the kicking game, the accuracy at goal kicking. Then he's got this running ability, and he muscles up in defence. So you sit there and you go, Budden Barrett, we know how good you are. We know the world knows how good you are. But we've got to talk about this kid because he is good. He is really, really good. So I think that's where the conversation is. I still think Bodie's your number one and will guide us through in those positions with the All Blacks and things like that. But I think the time is getting closer where Richie is literally sitting there going, you know, I'm not too far off now, mate.
I mean, it's a great conversation to be having when you've got two world-class 10s in the country and then another who can play 10 and is now starting to really fire at 15 where a lot of people can't.
He can't play 10.
He can't play 10?
He's not a 10.
The thing is with that, I think
at a pinch?
No, he's like, look what he's doing to the Chiefs. He's gone back to the fullback for the last three weeks. And
I agree.
Won.
I agree.
Here's a 15. Leave him at 15. Don't ruin him, because a 15 and a 10 is, and Millsy will know way better than me. I've never played 10. I played 15 a few times, but it's a completely different role, isn't it?
I'm not hitting those rucks again, eh? Yeah,
yeah. I never hit rucks. You know what I mean? It's a completely different role. It's a complete, yeah. Like, I'll listen to a 10 all day long, but when a 15 comes in there to do his role, you're like, mate, that's not – I'm used to just hearing you and you pass it to you, not tell me what to do and all that, just from a forward point of view, a game management point of view. And I think that's the biggest thing. As a 15, you're not game managing. You're people managing. Correct me if I'm wrong, Millsy. You're people managing with defense and attack. With 10, you're game managing. You're looking after those eight morons in front of you going, that way, that way, that way.
Yeah, but also seeing what's unfolding. I mean, I agree. I think he – I've said it. I mean, I believe he's a fullback, but I think deep down inside, D-Mac would probably see himself as a 10. I think personally, you know.
He does.
And that's where he's perhaps getting a little bit, you know, more unstuck, because but he's got the ability to go back to fullback and just be flamboyant like he is and carve up. The thing is, and when you look at it, okay, the Chiefs, you're similar to what you're saying about the Canes. The Chiefs haven't got a steady pack that's always dominant. You don't know what you're going to get. Then you got relatively inexperienced guys outside, and apart from Anton Leonard Brown, but still, you know, LB, he's still, you know, relatively inexperienced in that. And so, and we actually know him, he's all about that moment. So, you know, D-Mac perhaps doesn't get that guidance that he needs. Then you look at a Richie Mwonga, okay? Who have you got? Brent Hall, he's got guys inside him, you know, the all-black captain outside him, Ryan Crotty, you've got, you know, good, you all really good talkers and guys that are able to step up in that first receiver role. With Damien, he probably hasn't got that confidence to be able to have guys say, so all of a sudden, he's running around like a headless chook trying to organise everything, and he hasn't got that game management because he's trying to spark something from everywhere. And that's where, at the moment, for the Chiefs, he's really good for the at fullback, because he doesn't need to worry about whether they should kick downfield or organise someone to come, you know, outside him and run the ball up or inside or defend. But I just wonder whether he secretly sort of sees himself as a 10 long term.
Fair play, Millsy. I didn't consider what he thought. So it's one of my weaknesses, not actually considering what that person himself thinks. But you're probably right. He probably does consider himself as a 10.
Does anyone catch the Crusaders from here? I mean, do you start just piling in now and saying they are the team to beat, given the fact that they turned around what was a pretty awful performance the week before in Sydney and then crushed the other team on the same number of points as them in Wellington?
Without doubt.
Yeah, I think so too.
Without doubt.
Yeah.
Kieran Reid, 40 minutes. Are we happy? Is it good to see him back?
Yeah, it's always good to see All Black captain back, and you know, he's doing what he needs to do to time his run to get there. You know, it was a solid performance. The first 15 minutes, he had a lot of energy and he was into it, which was awesome. You know, you don't need to speak about Kieran Reid anymore. You know, you expect, as I said, greatness. You expect greatness every time, and you know, he very rarely doesn't deliver. So great first up. Plod.
Oh, you got to remember last year too, Sumo, when he came back, those sort of five games, man, he was physical. Huge. And then we spoke to him at the awards and he just said for the first time he actually feels really good about his back and injury free and that. Like, so he's not a guy that you worry about coming back and, you know, finding his feet. He'll come back and just bloody go hard from the word go, right?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Let's go to the Blues. 24-9, the final scoreline at Eden Park. Are you okay?
It's just poetry.
It's just, you could have a little tear for me in the corner of your eye there.
It's just amazing. It's just amazing.
I really liked it. I really liked the performance. Yeah. I just thought they actually looked like a team that knew how to shut a game down. And that is not something you've been able to say about that team.
They muscled up, mate.
They did muscle up.
They smashed the Stormers.
They're like, big boys too.
Physically, they smashed them. So you look at that front row, they're physical. And then you look at, oh, hold on, who do we bring off the bench? They're physical. You've got your second rowers who are charging. You've got a back three that's starting to work really, really well. I mean, Akiri Aine, to me, is just getting better and better and better. He is dominating the tackles.
What about the Samoan firm of Ioane and Ioane? How many tries is that going to combine for this
scary,
year?
Scary. Was it two on the weekend, wasn't it? Man. I mean, it's they obviously played together in the backyard, probably more down at Ponsonby Rugby Club, mm-hmm. where all great rugby players are born.
Born.
So to me, it was the physical dominance that the forwards showed, and two, it was the discipline that I haven't seen a Blues mm-hmm. team that disciplined, even down a man or anything like that. So to me, it was brilliant.
I like the fact that they didn't overplay their hand.
Yeah.
You know, the Stormers carried 163 times in that game, the Blues just 93 times. But they ran for more metres than the Stormers were able to on their carries. The tackling was still an issue, but the fact is 182 tackles made by the Blues in that game, 25 misses. The Stormers forced to make 92. They missed more. Mm. I mean, that to me is starting to show signs of a team that's saying, hey, you don't have to do everything. We don't have to run the ball willy-nilly. We don't have to throw it around. We don't have to do all of these things. If we just chip away, defend really well, we'll win our turnovers, we'll win our share of ruck ball, and then we can pounce on that. And I just sense that regardless of what happens with the Blues season from here on in, that they have turned a corner, I think. They have turned a mental corner in the way they approach the game.
They've found a balance.
Don't you think they have?
Yeah, I just get scared.
What?
No. I get scared because when we start talking them up, they start reading the press and then it goes pear-shaped.
I'm not talking them up because I'm not anointing them as champions just yet. But what I'm saying is that there are fundamental differences in the way the Blues are winning games at the moment, the way they are playing. And anyone who's watched that team over the last 10 years would be able to see that, wouldn't they?
Well, you're talking about the last 10 years. Those stats there that you've just spoken about, it's usually the opposite.
Right.
And the Blues are the ones that lose. They make the most metres. They've carried the ball the most. They've don't have to make too many tackles. And they've lost the game
600 times.
Yeah. And so where I think they have turned a corner and now they've got a little bit of confidence. And what I like about it is they haven't sort of played too much. You know, they've learned from a little bit as well. There's been execution issues, which has probably helped them now to overcome some of that adversity. Mm-hmm. And they're just starting to find sort of balance in their game. And if there was ever a game I thought that was going to be dangerous to them, it was after the Highlanders game against the Stormers mm-hmm. pack that basically dealt to the Hurricanes, albeit mm-hmm. They lost. But that was a time there for the Stormers to come here and go, we're just going to dominate you and eat you up. Yeah. And the Blues pack absolutely stood up. And so that's where I think, from a physical and mental state, because they could easily have done that. After the Highlanders, okay, we've won our first sort of New Zealand derby since 1,000 days, and then they could have gone off the mark. They've stepped up again another level. In terms of physicality, which I was really impressed. So I agree with you, Sumo. I think they've turned a corner, and long may it continue.
Yeah, the Leon McDonald effect, I'd say, over time is, as we just talked about Crusaders and what they bring, I would say Leon is slowly bringing it and saying to them, hey, you can win games by defending, by giving, Akira, Rico, the likes, the ball twice a game because mm-hmm. you guys are freaks
right? mm-hmm.
and you'll score two tries. But if we give it to you twice a game in the right time, you'll score. If we give it to you 15 times, then it's going to be hard for you to score because we're giving it to you at the wrong time. So I would say that the Leon Rangi effect is slowly starting to creep in terms of that discipline, composure and not having to play too much.
Ōtiri Black, I think he's starting to settle in there. Ōtiri, I think he looks good. His line off Sonny Bill with that offload under the post was a great line. But another guy, you look through his individual stats, he only passed the ball 19 times, kicked four times. I mean, he didn't overplay his hand, didn't have to be involved overly in the game. They're not using Ōtiri Black as your traditional first receiver here. They play a lot off Ruru and they play a lot off their outsides. And, I guess that's good for him. But they needed someone to settle into that job. And I think Ōtiri is showing signs too of being a guy who's slowly becoming accustomed to being the guy guiding that ship. That's got to be a positive for the Blues, doesn't it?
I'd say there's healthy competition between him and Plummer. I'd say no one's got that jersey, so it's not theirs. I would say Leon would also be thinking who it really is. But what I would also say is that they're both basically playing the same similar game, so it's easier for the team in terms of, you know, they're not overplaying their hand. One's not a runner, one's not a kicker. They're both pretty similar players. Defensively, they both muscle up and do their role. So I would still say it's still up for debate, but I think he is playing, he's playing better than he has a few weeks ago.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh, I also say, you know, Harry probably cost himself with a few poor decisions, the Highlanders, but a competition's healthy.
Yeah, I agree. I think they've got very good young tens. Yeah, Harry didn't play too well, you know, back end of that Highlanders game, and Ortega's come on. But what I like about these two guys, because it's such a hard position, especially up here, because everyone's expecting you to be like a Carlos. And so it's more mental than anything else. And now you've got guys that are helping out, you know, Ofuru, Sonny Bill, Ma'a's there as well. You almost, as a youngster, and this is what I'm seeing about these two guys, is they're stepping back and saying, well, we don't need to be that guy that's at the forefront. We don't need to be the star and run the cutter here. Let's just find some rhythm, find some balance, don't overplay, and let other guys control the game whilst we get our game together and whilst we get our sort of confidence up. So I definitely think it's still open for both of them. Altete Black, though, in the last sort of half to the game that he's just played, has probably stepped up the most, which has you know, been pretty good.
Before we carry on the short ball, Millsy, can you just explain what colour is that? What colour is that hoodie?
Oh, it's an orangey pink, I'd say. No.
Orangey pink.
Well, you said pink was pretty good colour, mate, so I'm just rolling out a pink hoodie.
It's not a colour you see in nature, is it?
No. You must be quite confident in yourself.
Oh, this is a present, actually.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So, from Joe. So, I've only worn it a few times.
So your partner's dressing you.
Is it like,
I dress myself. What we're saying?
I'm dressed myself. Well, is this kind of like, am I sort of trying to make a statement here? Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, no, I'm just asking. I'm genuinely interested.
You like it, though. So I know you do. You wouldn't have asked that.
No, I like the colour on you. It looks good on you. It wouldn't look good on me. It would wash me out.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, even the old Worms here wouldn't look too flash on that, would you?
No.
Have you gone a pink ever before?
I got a pink shirt, but I very rarely wear it.
How about yourself?
Yeah, I've got a pink shirt.
I reckon you guys roll it, mate.
Yeah, I'm a pastel kind of guy. Ellie's a pastel man. He likes a light blue. Sky blue brings out his eyes.
Sky blue goes with anything, mate. You just I roll that out.
Sky blue. What about sky blue in the European Cup?
What about sky blue?
Racing Metro Toulouse. Did you see that game?
Well, I know that Toulouse won it.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah.
They lost. Toulouse lost their fly half in the 20th minute. And muscled up, mate. Jerome Kano, Charlie Farmer-Wiener. It's incredible.
Do you know what I like about that? That final four, I was looking through that, and you've obviously got Leinster and Munster, and Irish have been pretty good in European Cup competition over the last few years. But Toulouse and Saracens as well, it's superstar clubs in the final
superstar
four.
Superstar.
Unreal. Club. And the other thing about it is, I looked at that Saracens score over Glasgow. Is it theirs? Is anyone beating Saracens? 50 points they chucked on Glasgow. I know they conceded 27, defence optional on that one. But where do you go here?
I reckon a Toulouse can beat them. Toulouse muscled up, man, and they got some flair out wide. I reckon they can beat them. Leinster's, they got muscle too. So it's quite interesting. Those games are won on their muscle. Boom, 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 and then it just takes a few split decisions to change it and some space out wide, and those guys can, so good. It's just such a good competition.
And it's so different to Super, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it is. Like the physicality, and like you say, it's one on muscle. Man, that makes a huge difference, over there. It's just kind of like, it just gets everyone up, but you win a couple of big muscled up moments and far out, that turns the game.
Yeah.
Is it ever going to change the nature of that competition? Because I don't think there's any shortage of flair and exciting moments, but no. There's so much onus on the packs of all of these teams to get in there and be attritional, be combative, and grind out the territory in these games. Mm. Probably more so than we put on Super Rugby teams.
Yeah, territory's huge in that game. And then the other point is that they're still in the realms that if you get a penalty within kicking distance...
Oh, you're kicking it.
You kick it, and we're going to accumulate point pressure. Mm. Well, we don't have it here. It's vanished. Our point pressure is through tries. So to me, as long as you keep on that type of theory on how you win, point pressure, then forwards are the ones to dominate, and you've got to get that territory and possession sort of basis. So winter plays a big part in it.
Conditions, eh? Yeah.
You muscle down. But if you look at that, two of them were played on, I think two of the games were played on synthetics in the weekend. So, you know, their tracks are not as bad as people think, you know, and they can play running rugby. It's just the emphasis is there on that possession state.
It's such a good competition, though. The action's so exciting. I really do like the Heineken Cup, as it once was called.
It's still called the Heineken Cup now, isn't it?
The Heineken Champions Cup.
Yeah, Heineken's Champions Cup, yeah. Mm-hmm. I tell you what, it's fantastic when you win a championship like that when the sponsor is a brewery.
What sponsor in rugby is not a brewery? I mean,
it's
a beer.
It's the headline, the champ. The championship.
The major
sponsors, and you just... It's just so rewarding.
We do not endorse binge drinking here on the short ball, but boy, we enjoy it. I'm glad you brought up Europe because they couldn't get their mitts, and neither could Japan, on Aaron Smith. He's re-signed until the end of 2021 with New Zealand Rugby, the Highlanders, and ironically with the Turbos. Don't know what he's going to give them, but anyway, it's a nice nod to provincial rugby. Great news
that
the Nugget is sticking around, and... You know, I don't have the fear factor that some do, that we're going to lose all our players overseas, but there's always a demand for them, and we all know that this All Black team is going to lose a lot of firepower at the end of this World Cup cycle, but should we be genuinely excited by the fact that a player of Aaron Smith's calibre has decided to stay?
Yeah, and his experience, you know, his length playing in New Zealand rugby, and yet he's still inspired to do greater things in the jersey. So, I mean, I think it's commendable for him. I also think if we weigh up the reality, financially, these All Blacks, top All Blacks, are on good money.
Mm-hmm.
And the money overseas is actually not as good sometimes with these top-tier All Blacks. So I don't think it's a financial decision anymore, or it used to be, potentially. I think it's more an experience. You know, you look at someone like Ryan Crotty, he's sitting there going, well, you know, I want to experience something else. I've been in this club, this Crusaders club and the All Blacks, but I need to experience something else. And I think that's sort of where those decisions are coming down to now. And the tier below, then I think it's financial decisions.
Mm. So. Yeah, I guess that's the tension, isn't it? Your top All Blacks are always going to have a finite career. They're going to say, hey, look, I've ticked all the boxes I need to tick here. I can go off and enjoy some time with family somewhere else. But it is the rung below the Aaron Smiths that I guess gives New Zealand rugby the most cause for a bit of panic and sleep.
Yeah, because you're kind of bordering on experience, you know, I mean, the level below. If we lost Aaron Smith, okay, the level below him, well, TJ Piranara is there, but Tahu Rangi's there as well. He's relatively, you know, pretty scarce in terms of that sort of experience. And that's why, you know, New Zealand rugby's so keen to keep them on. But I think they've changed a couple of things in terms of their pay over the last few years and trying to keep those guys here. I think if you miss out, you still get a percentage of the week that they're in. So That's really healthy that New Zealand rugby has sort of seen that, to try and keep these guys here. But it's a pleasing aspect because you don't. I mean, you're right, Wams. It is. It's a real. It's for the top guys. It becomes more of, you know, what you're going to get in the hand as opposed to tax here, right? And that's the difference. So it's more experience.
I want to ask a serious question of both of you. How important was it for you guys in your careers to know that there were guys coming through behind you who wanted to take your jersey? How motivating was that? Or did you not think about that at all? Did you feel like, this is my position, I've got this and I'm good enough?
For me, I think I went through a real period of there wasn't much competition for a wee while. I think a couple of guys just came in at the back end of my career. So it didn't there was lots changing in the All Black environment, you know, in terms of when I first came in, it was all about competition and, man, I'm not going to help that guy get in there or whatever. I just kind of went about my own sort of business and, you know, I was fairly lucky. But down the later part, it actually got you on edge. We actually got to a stage where we all wanted to help out, and regardless of whether you started or not, it didn't really matter. It just created a real – and I know, you know, that might not convince people, but it actually did. And in the end, it didn't, because the environment was so good like that, it was kind of like, well, you know, if I get a shot, then I get a shot. And if I don't, well, I know the best guys getting out there to play. Yeah, it sucked, but it was all more generated around making sure we'd won and win a Rugby World Cup, because we hadn't up until then. So the focus is a little bit different for me, but the competition was always good because you knew those guys were nipping at your heels. And it also made you think of how you could change your game. The different things that you could try and take on from other guys. I mean, I had Izzy sort of nipping at mine, and in the end he ended up taking it, but there was no way I was going to learn a goose step, right? Not at that end of my bloody career, but I knew if I defended well and I got myself in good position, I had good, you know, communication skills and lined everything up, then perhaps that might have been the little edge that got me over sort of being selected, high balls and things like that. So little wee subtle things to try and make sure, well, that when the coaches sat down and discussed Israel Dagg and Mills Mulley, you know, okay, Millsy hasn't got the goose yet, but, you know, he's going to make, you know, tackles in the last line of defence.
Did you end up sticking your tongue out when you ran as well, just to have a bit of Izzy in your game?
Yeah, that really was his stance. I was like, he almost stick it all out.
He almost tripped over that thing a couple of times.
That tongue.
Yeah.
I still remember that try in Johannesburg, where he was just that far away from the inches line. On the touchline. Gee, that was awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, my career went, you know, I always had competition, and I was always basically, yeah, he's good, but he's not the rock star, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so I constantly had to better my game, and there was a new kid on the block and constantly had to do it. And I had to offer different things in the team environment. As Millsy says, it got to a stage where it wasn't about you anymore. You actually just didn't really worry about what your end game was. It was more about how the team went. And then, you know, I got to a situation where my body just literally failed me, just started failing, and I just started getting so wound up internally and
mentally, right?
Mentally and distressed, yeah, that I can't do what I used to be able to do, and I can't train how I used to be able to train. So, you know, for me, instead of the 20 minutes extras, which I'd like to do some fitness and do all this sort of stuff, I couldn't do that. So I had to do sort of walk activation type of tackles and just things like that, which eventually started frustrating me. And then I think you get to a point where you're like, mate, I can't be that much better. So then you get, then you sort of go, well, okay, what can I do to help everyone? And mm-hmm. So that's when you sort of start going, yeah. Sammy, Brody, all these boys, I was like, this is my book of knowledge. Go for it, you know. And then they start teaching you things. And you're like, oh, okay. And then that's sort of where we, you know, it was a theory that you be coached and coach, so you can coach and be coached by them. And then, you know, and then the truth just hits you square between the eyes, and, you know, Brody Retallick plays his first game, and he goes to his mum, Mum, I just want to introduce you to someone. She goes, oh, who's this? He goes, this is Ellie Williams. She goes, oh, I know this guy. This is the guy you're going to replace, isn't it?
Said, no.
Bang on.
She did not.
She said
Joe said that to you.
Not a word of a lie. And I said, you know what? You're quite right. My time is over here. And it's quite a cool story with me and Brody, because when he was 15 or 16, I saw him it was probably 17 or 18. I saw him at McDonald's at 3 a.m. in the morning in Christchurch, and he came up to me. He says, mate, I'm going to take your jersey one day. And I said, buddy, give me 5 years, and you can have it. And I would say almost 5 years to the day in Christchurch was when he sort of took my jersey.
A lot can happen at Macca's at 3 a.m.
Oh, mate.
A lot can happen.
Mate, it was incredible. But
so he went in for a Big Mac combo and came out in All Black. That's
not a bad transition.
It's not a bad transition.
He hoofed it down too, didn't he?
I guarantee
he had a big motor on him, Gold Guzzler.
Mate, it's a great insight for me because I believe in the strength of New Zealand rugby being those guys pushing the top athletes, always at the heels. It gives you guys the perspective who've been in that All Black jersey to say, you know, I can mature here and I can help pull them up, almost like put the ladder back down for these guys, but also knowing that once you put the ladder back down, they're coming for you.
Yeah. Mate, I knew that first when Izzy started playing, Izzy and Zachy started playing for in the NPC. When I first seen them, I was like, gee, bro, these guys are coming. Because for a long time there, I didn't have anything. There's some youngsters coming, and they'll be here very soon. So it almost gave you a sense of, well, you know, you've really got to now your role. And that's why it's so good. I mean, you talk about Aaron Smith, a guy like Aaron Smith staying around, and then he feeds that to those guys. I get on really well with them, and I loved having CJ and Izzy and that and Zachy. Like, they're really good blokes, and you want to share that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Having a guy like Aaron Smith stay here to be able to feed that and then continue, that's why All Black rugby is so great. Mm-hmm. And you talk about the experience and things like that, but that experience sort of made a lot of us stay around for a very long time because, mate, when I left, I really struggled. I really struggled with the fact that you weren't really playing for the team anymore, and you banged heads about certain things that you knew was quite right. And that environment, I mean, the dollars was massive. Everyone used to say, "Look, that's what. Look at your bank account." Like, oh, mate, I looked at it, but it didn't give you that sense of pleasure that being in an All Black environment did, sure. You know. And so that's the beauty about New Zealand rugby and sort of what they do and sort of how you pass things on.
Mm. And I think the other element that comes with it is, as a senior player, it comes to a stage where you sit there and you go, okay, the cold hard truth is this guy's better than you, mate.
Mm.
But you can still offer us a lot during the week and you can offer us a lot off the bench. You have the choice. You either bugger off or you don't fit into this environment. You don't accept your new position, which is not that starting rock star.
It's a hard reality to accept, right?
Or you accept it and you grow and you nurture the team. So, you know, I was there sort of maybe 2 to 3 years as that guy that's sort of chilling behind. Like, I wasn't at my best. I wasn't the starting. And then you get to someone like Kevy, who we all knew his talent and his ability, but what he offered and he accepted his role was, hey, mate, I'm the older guy. I'm not going to start a lot of matches, but I'd love to be on the bench and I'll give you everything during the week. And I'll play my Super Rugby and I'll hang around for a few more years. And that is, to me, that's the summary of great leaders going out in a great, dignant way rather than those guys just
in a dignified way. Yeah. That's it. And he became so crucial and central to the culture of that team. And that was always the argument for him. You know, he was playing probably 18 minutes a game at that stage.
Yeah.
But so fundamental was Kevin Mialamu to setting the tone for the side that you had to include him in your squad. Mm. I mean, what a great thing to have on your CV. Mm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, that was the mark of great All Blacks that weren't your rock stars, if that makes sense, the ones that hung around for those 2 or 3 years. And that's where I see someone like an Aaron Smith. He could be your Dan or your Richie and just play great right till the day they stop. But I still believe that he's a guy that will nurture as well. And he'll coast younger guys.
Well, it's good to have him here. Boys, we're going to wrap up the short ball today with a little look at Round 8 of Super Rugby coming your way this weekend on Rugby Pass. Highlanders v the Hurricanes. Two sides that only met, a few weeks ago, where the Highlanders...
This isn't a cake tin?
No,
this is at Forsyth Bar.
They haven't lost yet for a while. They're supposed to play the Crusaders in that game that got cancelled. So
it's the first time at home in a long time. Yeah. They had a bye week, and then so what are we talking? Only 3 weeks between games.
I'm going the Highlanders.
Yeah, the Highlanders need this.
Massively.
They need this big time, right?
There's something about them. There's the games that we've used to seeing them get at the death.
They're not at the moment. That's what I'm seeing too. Yeah.
And the Hurricanes ran them down in that first fixture of the season. Dane Coles, who refused to be subbed. What about that? Goes 80 minutes, Dane Coles. I'm with you. I think the Highlanders are pretty rested. You know, they've had that week off when they were supposed to play the Crusaders. They've had a bye week. They've got to be fully charged and ready to go. I don't know. Is it counterproductive to have so long off during a season? I'm not sure in terms of actually playing footy.
Well, it almost gives them a sense of, well, let's regroup and restart. Okay, you know, it hasn't gone right the last couple of weeks, and we've had a bye also as well. But man, I mean, even that Hurricanes game that played in Wellington, I turned it off with about 20 because I thought, oh, yeah, the Highlanders are going to win. And they ended up losing the last sort of couple of minutes. So the Highlanders, I think they'll win this. They'll need it big time. They do need it big time.
We move to the Blues and the Tars. Waratahs getting done by the Sunwolves. Jeez, I love that. And not because I don't like the Waratahs, just the Sunwolves have gone full rogue now. They have literally just said, we are a travelling gypsy band of club players. Yeah. Let's go out there. After the game, they didn't even go back to the hotel. Get this with the Sunwolves. They decided we'll take a chili bin down to the beach and we'll have a beer on the beach. Oh, how
that's
good.
That's magic. Who coaches the Sunwolves?
So Corey Brown's involved, Tony Brown's involved, Marty Veal's involved, and Scotty Hansen's involved.
Beautiful.
How good?
Great. Yeah, I'd say this is away, isn't it?
The Blues are at home.
Yeah, Garden of Eden. You can't beat it. I'd say the Blues.
You going to pick the Blues here?
Yeah.
I think this 12 and under. The Blues 12 and under? I think this would be huge.
No, I think it's over. I think it's the Blues. The Blues will win 13 plus.
Oh, yes.
Really?
Shap, shap. You come back with confidence.
You're going to lose your Chiefs Munna badge here.
No, I'm not losing Chiefs Munna. Oh,
Chiefs
two in a row, mate. Come on, mate.
We haven't even touched on the Chiefs.
Overseas, come on, the Munna.
Finally, the Crusaders taking on the Brumbies from a New Zealand point of view. Brums had a bye as well last weekend. I can't see the red and black machine getting troubled too much at home. First time at home since those terrible events.
Crusaders will smash them.
Smash them.
Smash them.
Brumbies have been a mixed bag, eh, this year, eh, so far. I thought they were the goods at round one, but.
It's exciting, boys. It is all very, very exciting.
You want to go to work, don't you?
I need to go to work. I mean, I'm sitting next to a guy with a pink shirt on and T-shirt.
Hoodie.
But you've done some serviette origami for this whole pod. I do, actually. Yeah, what have you made there? A little boat?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It was more like, yeah, it was. I don't know.
It's nice. Well, it's good multitasking.
Yeah, it's a little boat, mate. Yeah, it's a little boat.
It's great to have you back too, mate. I'll put the diary note in your calendar.
Can we do that? Can we set that, please, boys?
Yeah. Can you just explain to me why you need a diary note?
I'm not a media tycoon like you guys. Like, I don't live and die by this stuff. Like, you guys do it all day, every day. You talk rubbish. I'm actually, you know,
Did you need a diary invite to get to bloody training?
Mate, I had a manager. Team manager told me you've got to be on the bus. All we had to do was be on the bus.
Yeah, but hang on. When the team manager told you got to be on the bus at this time, did you say, hey, can you just send that through to me?
No, we had the sheet. Don't you remember?
You're one of those guys, eh? When the manager puts it down in the team room and on top of the whiteboard, you're like, nah, everyone's got to have a sheet. Send that up to my room. You're one of those guys, eh?
No, you had your sheet. You had your sheet and it was like, you know, Tuesday, 9:33, be on the bus.
Did you make origami with your sheet?
No, normally I had a young roommate. Mate, tell me where I have to be. Okay.
we're getting to the crux of it now. So who do I need to tell you?
Just put it. You know those calendar invitations.
No idea.
Just invite people, and you can go from there.
Okay.
Do you want me to do it?
Yeah, you should do that.
What time should we do next week?
I don't know. We'll discuss that after we finish here. We'll let them
see.
This
is what I'm working
go.
With. These guys are.
Hey, well, we're the only ones that always turn up.
We're here.
Oh, we find that funny, do we, in the bleachers?
Tina knows.
It's been the Short Ball for another week. Great to have you with us. Sally Williams, Mills, Molly Eno, Scotty Stevenson. We'll join you next week. Enjoy the Super Rugby this weekend and everything else besides. Cheers.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.